I'm Dave
Simon. I've become a parody of myself.
I've become a parody.
And I'm unaware of it.
Unaware of it, but I'm getting paid big bucks. Who the fuck cares? At least I'm not Todd McFarlane in a toy line.
All right, Mr. Blumenstein, shall we kick off?
Yeah.
Do you want to go?
Yes. Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming. This is the comic book funny number two. Thank you, Joe. Number two. And we have on the stage a respected comics broadcaster, John Retallick. No, that's you. That's you.
Me. Thank you.
John. And some guy called Jared Ashworth.
Inimitable.
You have an introduction for him.
Can I do have an introduction for you, as written by that. You for me. So, a few factoids. I started with Electric Ferret in 1987, which ran for a stunning run of 32 issues of something that was treated like it was some sort of leprous disease, except for folk who have an interest in such. It covered a lot of turf, a lot of it involving a waste of trees. Some of it I hold by, some of it is okay. A lot of it is okay. A lot of it is regrettable. I'm told I'm harsh on myself, yet when you consider the lethargic humours and tedious artness most people are getting away with, I like to make it hard on myself to disturb the gutless wonders of their selves. Electric Ferret also was the birthplace of weird stress kittens and of my current and one of my current rags, Limbo August. There's a lot more than that, but as you'll notice, two certain ladies seem to hold sway over me. Other than that, you have to figure it out for yourself. I don't spoon feed. And when you interview me, go for it. Don't be tedious or obvious. Delve, engage, enrage. Don't make it easy on me and treat me with a little bit of respect. Respect for comic book folk may love. There we go. Sorry, I think I misquoted you there. And expect wild tangents, humour, laughs, and perhaps a horrifying degree of intelligence. Let's get minds working. So are your minds ready to work? I would like to introduce to everybody our guest for Comic Book Funny Week 2, part of Comedy at Trades in the Melbourne International Comedy Festival 2009. Special guest, the elusive and imitable Jared Ashworth. Welcome to the stage, Jared.
Since we don't, I say
round of applause. Excellent.
I'm intimidable.
Now, inimitable.
Oh.
I'm not quite sure what it means, but it sounds
no,
right.
Don't. Sounds cool. Yeah, right, let's go for it.
That's cool. Now, Jared, tell me, who are your influences? No, I'm only joking. Let's...
Urge to Kill Rising. Go
yes.
ahead.
No, you've... I only really know you of you in the last year or so through David, and he's just said one of your works was in the 2008 in the bar here at the Bally Union Bar, up on the wall, and everyone who hadn't seen any work of yours for a while went and had a look at it and was commenting on
make a great dartboard.
How good it was. No, it didn't make a good dartboard. The walls are too hard.
Right.
It created a little bit of buzz and I was intrigued. And I've read a little bit of your work lately. And you've your work just has so much energy and passion in it.
Mm.
And first I just want to get from you, ask of you, where does that come from in your work? It's just, it's frenetic to look at. Where does that come from in you?
People frighten me. No, basically, I don't know where it comes from. There's a whole lot of things raging me most of the time in that. I've had it ever since I was a kid in that.
Mm-hmm.
If I was a kid, I was probably one of those kids that should be tranked at an early age and that further. Being subject to sort of causing distresses in classrooms and having hallucinations like crazy and reading too many of those god-awful comic books that, which, you know, cause hideous things to all of us, as to any of us when we're young, you know.
So what sort of stuff were you reading when you were young? What was triggering this mind racing?
Well, it was mice before that. Mm-hmm. I was having hallucinations even when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But I got into comics, you know, one thing led to another and that. But I was reading everything. You know, it started with the usual couple of superheroes. My sister, who was a librarian, noticed about I was into comics and dragged down things like Crazy Cat and Pogo and the Peanuts and all these great reprints of old stuff and that. Mm-hmm. And boy, the chase was on. Then I became aware of underground comics and Warren and Europeans and everything. This is all in a short space of time.
Mm-hmm.
And like any junkie who gets into anything, and that includes some of you who've gotten into music or something. any of you got to music, any sort of art form, you know, once you get the bug, you say, I got to know more. Mm. I got to have more. So that's, and it was all sorts of stuff, everything.
So that's the sort of comic. What about what other arts and other segments of the world were feeding that intensity in you?
Everything that was going on in reality and what the world was around me, the sort of sheer brutality of existence. Yeah. Which we all go through at a tender young age, which is really great fun and doesn't make as much great material as you think it would be, because most of it's tedious and boring and self-involved. But the really good parts are really good fun to share. But there was a lot of other things going on around as well, and that I've had problems, so I'm told, and seeing psychiatrists for a number of years and that, and I don't think like other people. I mean, big surprise there. Tell me about it. Tell my friends about it. Tell some of you people about it. But no, mostly just people can understand where the energy is coming from. It's so, just, yeah.
So how does that manifest itself? You sort of thinking differently in taking in the, you know, sensation from the world differently. How do you see yourself as perceiving the world differently to other people?
Mm-hmm. I take in too much.
Too much, yeah?
Too much comes in, too much stimuli, too much stuff going in all the time, and that one thing sets off another and that. I'm amazed I'm being so restrained at the present time, but I've kind of calmed down the past couple of years, all the pills are taking effect. But no, it really does sometimes, it's overstimulization. It's like not being able to, not lack of ideas, it's too many ideas. And so the world does, that's why I have to back away occasionally, you know.
So you've expressed that through your comics. Why, I suppose, comics, if you can answer why, rather than music or cooking or, I don't know, drinking in the middle of the street, you know?
I've done that.
Yeah. So why do you think, do you have any idea of why
you're
attracted
to it? Don't talk
about
my ears in the gutter. That's really fun, the dirty. Look at people interested. Look at them. They're bored already.
No.
Dull down their senses.
Well, we can talk about the gutter years.
We'll get to the gutter years. That's more fun. We want some dirty. We want some gossip. That's the thing. That,
but
I want to be on the star pages of a paper on the Sunday afternoon, you know, with people watching that.
But
Jared's seen with Lindsay Lohan, yeah.
But I'm interested, why this? Why words and pictures together? Why the way your mind works differently from mine? Why are you still attracted to doing this, you know, rather than something else? What makes that appealing to your mind?
But I don't know, just the knack for it. I've never been able to figure out why some of us make a kind of mental connection between figures and one thing or another. Why does some of us suddenly choose, oh, I can put a tune together. I think I'll go find music. I seem to have the ability to scroll on walls. Maybe I'll do it on paper and get something for it. I have something to do words together. I never can figure out where exactly some of us have got something that makes that magic connects. We go, yeah, words and pictures, that makes sense. So maybe because when we're seeing things as a kid, we see comics, you know, we mimic things. We'll mimic things off the TV. We'll mimic drawing things and that. But I don't know what was about comics that suddenly just clicked to my head from early age, and still have to explain to people many years later what makes comics work for a lot of us. It's like, so we suddenly know there's something more to this. You know, we'll go for this. You know, just said, I like words and pictures. I do funny pictures. And after a while, it starts becoming a bit more.
It's like an alchemy that happens between the words and pictures.
It's an alchemy in that, yeah. An alchemy between the words and the pictures and that. Eventually, also, it helps you be able to discover other art forms and how to actually write and draw. That helps a lot.
Yeah.
But no, there's some strange alchemy. I've never been able to quite figure out. I mean, I was pretty, I wouldn't say one of those people, ever since I was a young child, I knew I was going to do comics.
Yes.
I didn't know I was going to do comics. I just gave it, after a while, I said, well, this is the only thing I've got a knack for. I'm just going to do comics. And here I am. Totally unemployed for 20 years.
That's it, like a true comic artist.
True comic artist. Yeah. No, I don't employ myself. I'm too wayward. I just sort of know, stuff is a bit too...
So in the last 25 years, you've produced, what, 40 comics? Full
40
size?
Comics comics of all sizes and hundreds of pages. And, and some that will never see the light of day again.
Do you journal? Do you sort of keep journals and tons of stuff that we don't see?
This is the weird thing. I don't keep sketchbooks. I don't keep journals. Everything's straight on the page.
Yeah.
for someone who's incredibly incompetent, it's amazing I've been able to go on for so many years on some modicum of talent I've got, or an ability to put words together, usually too many of them, but able to put all this stuff together. But I've never, one of those people keep a journal. Only now my actually drawing things here at my tender age of middle 40s, putting things together, because I've got to keep, if I'm doing Limbo August, I have to say, well, Daddy looks, the character looks like this, she looks like that, mm-hmm. that background's there, that story plot's got to be there, mm-hmm. that's got to come from a bit of real life. You know, just the little details. Because most of the stuff was screaming right off of my head.
Yeah. Is that the biggest change in your work from what you're doing now to the earlier stuff? Is that, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier, about the a little bit more narrative to it, so there's a bit of world building and breathing space in that work.
It's a nice change, because after a while it just gets, as I was talking to you about, it just gets like after a while saying it's just too much of an excuse to sort of do that all the time. It doesn't make you a better artist or a writer in that. Sometimes it'll lead you just totally lost in that. It works sometimes. When it really works, it did in that. But sometimes to me it was just a bloody excuse. I was starting to get really bad. I was losing it. Well, I just couldn't stand myself. I couldn't stand other people in that. But sometimes you need a structure. You need a goddamn solid structure. You can't just riff and go crazy all the time because it gets boring.
Do you think that would be a shock to your younger self? If you could talk to your younger self 25 years ago, sit him down and go, you need a structure.
I wouldn't have listened.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have listened. I would have thought, people did tell me you need a structure, said, I know what I'm doing.
Right. I know what I'm doing. I didn't know what I was doing until about 10 years into it. Yeah. And even then it took me a while to figure out, oh, right, it's got something to do with cats and this other woman. I didn't know that was going to happen. So let's talk about the cats. Let's talk about these weird stress kittens.
Yeah.
What are they?
Okay, that just started as a bit of wordplay. That's all.
Yeah.
But it just started, just wrote down weird stress kittens. It's just something scribbling down when I'm drawing something else. I said, that sounds very silly. There's nothing to it. It wasn't like someone said, oh, it's like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I said, I hated that shit. I've got nothing to do with it. I don't want anything. It's just a silly idea, a silly little satirical riff I did in that. I was going to kill them off with their first appearance, and I didn't. And I just thought, wait a second, something's here.
So what was there?
I don't know. I just said, I don't know. It was one of those things that happens. You don't go into it. You stumble and say, wait a sec. I was going to kill them off, and then decide, no, I'm going to do another one of these. And suddenly I started to warm to them.
So who are they? Who are the weird stress kids?
The weird stress kids, the four of them. I'm not going to explain their origins because I've actually redone a reformat of the entire thing to fit to the Limbo verse. Well, they've always fit into the Limbo, Limbo August verse. But, okay, basically they start as four squat little sort of balls of fury that were sort of saying everything, tearing everything down in that, basically at the start, it was apparent from the start that it wasn't just going to be basically like that, was like taking on anything that came along, society, culture, the whole works, the way we looked at things, the way we considered things. So the characters started to develop pretty much as they went along. They were just named, they were just basically named Sabrina, the pretty kitty cat one, and it was just a sort of Kafka, the sort of cringy kitty, and sort of Kafka, the black, Gorky, the black cat, and Alphonse, a character who would soon turn out to be virtually useless, but we'll get to that. But they're just named. I just named them and stuff like that. I had no idea that suddenly as you're going through some of these things sometimes, and this is something you can't recreate, you can't do in a studio, you can't do it by yourself, you don't know how it's going to happen. Something just goes click in your head and say, I don't know what's happening here, but I like it. I'm going forward with this. Something just reacted in my mind. I think I found it. But I just went on with doing them. And something started reacting to that. I didn't know I was going to do anything to do with funny bloody animals, even though I love Pogo and sort of Warner Brothers cartoons and stuff like that. I had no idea at all. I had no idea the sort of mess I was going to get involving idiots like the furries and the sub-fur lands and things of that nature, all that, or some other things they said, which had freaked me out completely.
So the whole furry subculture was attracted to them without really understanding them?
Basically, a few people got a blessing. A few people said, aha, something's happening. This isn't the usual sort of, we've lopped off a head and sort of put a animals on it. Said, there's something more going on here, blessed. And they said, something, this is more personal than this is expected. This is a bit more savage than we expected. We'd like a pleasant fake, but then I was just going on all comers. But the characters started... Yeah. Sorry, you first.
I was just going to say, so what... a lot of writers say, did those characters write themselves, create their own sort of adventures, or were you saying, oh, this is what I want to explore, and then I'm going to pop these characters in that environment what happens.
I express it for riding the id train.
Mm-hmm.
I just let go and let those babies go. They're parts of me. Everyone says, and then the character took over themselves and sort of started. I said, no, they're parts of me. I know what the game is played and that, which is pretty much a worry when one of the characters I identify with the most is the sort of female character of the troop. Sabrina. I have a weird relationship with that character, which some people have sussed out for many years.
So what is that relationship?
I'm pretty much in love with her.
Yeah?
Yes!
That's good. What's attractive about her?
Just she's a passionate and sort of crazed individual. She's intelligent, extremely intelligent for a woman. She's not usual prattling idiot, drone character you see most female characters nowadays. She's got her own personality, her own character, her own individual character in that. And she's you could say she's sexualized, but she always understands her own sexuality. I can't control her.
But if she's part of you, if she's not controlling herself, like you said a second ago.
She's part of me, and that part of me sort of saying, some part of me wants to be like this sometimes.
Yes,
a female
yes.
friend point out sometimes, she's your passion, isn't she?
Yes.
I said, yeah, she is, she's really passionate. Sometimes I'm not because I'm a small crawling thing, and she isn't.
Okay.
She gets out there and that. But I didn't know. I knew when she first sort of came up. There she is.
Yeah. Hi, Sabrina.
She's dominating me over the
thing. Yes. And who's this?
That's Alphonse, that character. Alphonse is a character that never really worked.
Okay.
Alphonse disappeared very rapidly because I suddenly got concentrated on Sab, and then I started other characters interested me more, like Kafka. And Gorky. Gorky was a
sort of Gorky here?
That's Gorky, yes. Gorky's a constant sort of gay guy. He's totally over his fucking mind on drugs or whatever the hell he can get his hands on most of the time.
He's an experimenter.
He hates humanity. He despises anyone and stuff like that. He's like a sort of a more psychotic version of, Wile E. Coyote, if that's possible.
He's an experimenter of exotic pharmaceuticals, according to his legend.
Absolutely. And this is too demure for him. He was a guy who'd probably lick up the glass or some pharmaceutical if he found on the ground, and he has on occasion and that. Kafka's like a small quivering. And it's actually, Kafka is basically not really one thing I found surprising work we never found out. Everyone thought it was a nasty person that. But after a while, I started to approach, say, Kafka as sort of, this is a really nice person. So Kafka approaches as kind of nervous guy.
He's a bit vulnerable, is he?
He's a bit vulnerable and nervous, but he really does mean well. He's not a whip. I've done times where he's actually fought for himself and stood up on principle for things, which is good, which surprised me sometimes. But generally I found out, this is interesting. They're not all sort of, they're growing facets. They're not simple little sort of one-dimensional characters. They've got more facets to them, like a human. They're not interesting if they haven't got all these things going on, if there's more to play with or work with.
Now, we're looking at some of the portraits that are up behind us of these characters. You've got an interesting mixture of styles between your hand-drawn stuff and then some found images,
Those found images were all pulps in science fiction. I've got stacks of this stuff, folks. I just picked up the ones that seemed appropriate for the characters and just went, yeah, that suits right. She would be like, sort of, now, I'm in charge of the psyche. I'm in charge of the science, boys. Now back off.
So do you... Most of your stuff is hand-drawn, but there are elements mixed through it, like one of the modern murders. Because your comic Weird Stress... No, Electric Ferret morphed into Modern Murders.
For all of 3 issues.
Yes. And
I hope this isn't boring of you folks out there, so wake up.
Modern Murder, 28. And we're going to ask some questions of the audience in a second. This is the one, I think, it's got you talking about your relationship with your... You're giving up your pornography or something?
What happened? I had a psychotic break with my pornography, which involved itself most of those sort of strange things coming alive and haunting me. This happened in a psychotic state of mind. I had to do this story. It's a famous story, but people find, you do one of those sort of, I masturbate stories. No, folks, I got this sort of weirdo shit started to happen to me. No, I didn't use drugs or anything. I go for the oddest damn things. I've got too much imagination.
Yeah.
So that started to come from that. I said, I'm going to do this down and do it as a sort of me talking to one of my characters about the entire thing, bring up really nasty personal experiences about it and try and make it sort of, some sort of something beyond the sort of, another bloody wank, personal wank strip.
Yeah, not another Joe Matt comic.
Not another Joe Matt piece of, I masturbate a lot. Oh, thanks, Joe. The world already knows that.
So who's this character you're talking to? in it.
That, unfortunately, everyone knew who it was that I was talking to. It was another female character. They seem to pop up a lot with me that I started to use. But alas, people, some of my friends who know me very well said, that's Danny, that's Limbo August you're talking to. And I had to say, yes.
So who's Limbo August for the...
Danny is the sister of Sab and the kittens in that. And this is one of the things that freaked out people quite early in that, that I suddenly knew that they're related. From the early days of this Limbo August character, this woman with living hair and that, I knew they were in the same universe and they were related. They were brothers and sisters and that. And I had some people saying, that's impossible. I said, I'm a fucking cartoonist. Don't tell me what's impossible.
So all of your characters...
They're just personal.
They all live in the same world.
They're in the same place. It's a place I call, appropriately enough, The Place. I can't come up with any other name for it, folks. I tried to do the usual fancy dodge of coming up with an exotic name. I thought, oh, screw it, I'm just going to call it The Place. You could call it something vaguely Celtic if you feel like it.
Well, what we'll do is we'll take a small break, get a couple of questions from the audience, and I'll just let them know that I might get to you to talk in a minute a little bit about your actual, for want of a better word, process. We'll come back to that in a second.
I've got a process?
You do. You must have. You don't produce 40 works without having some semblance of a process. But does anyone have any questions for Jared that we haven't touched on yet about his weird stress kittens or any of the stuff he's spoken about so far? David at the back has a microphone.
People. Come on, people. Come on, please.
There's a
question down here. Dean's got one.
I'm not going to bite you, people. Come on. Yeah.
Jared, I heard a vicious rumour that you spent some time in Frankston, and I was wondering if you feel that geographically, so where you are kind of influences your work.
Pardon?
If where you
Frankston are... Frankston was a big influence to me, and that I had a great time.
So how does geography or your place influence the place?
I have no sense of geography, for one thing, and if you point me to a map, I don't know where we are right now. Mm-hmm. But no, geography did. I got misplaced from Blacktown and Seven Hills, which was a fun experience, then down to sort of Victoria for 5 years, and misplaced again in that.
Black Hill? Where's Black Hill?
Blacktown.
Blacktown,
Seven Hills. It was a great place in the old late 60s, mm-hmm. early 70s.
How old were you when you came down to Frankston for a few years?
10.
10.
9, 10. 9, 10. 8. Oh, God, I'm hopeless. Around that age, early young, so I was down there for 5, 6 years, which was good because that's when I discovered places that, you know, had all these other great, cool underground comics and stuff that I could pick up. Mm-hmm. But that was influenced too because geographically I was kind of like all over the place and that.
Yep.
I never really made any steady friendships, one thing in that. Mm-hmm. It was always hard in that.
And once you went back up north in your later teens, how was that time for you?
Later teens, went up to Sydney and Dad had brought a bookshop and I was partly in charge of it because I was in charge of all the science fiction and all the fantasy and all the comics and stuff like that because Dad, it was his late 70s folks, Star Wars was still in vogue and since I knew all this stuff, you know, nerd that I was and still am.
So are you a voracious reader?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah?
I was in a bookshop and thought, you know, reading books all the time and that. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't just I read, it's just comic books and science fiction. I was reading like anyone else. You're a racist, you read everything. Mm. Going to a bookshop was like hog's heaven. Oh, no, journalism. Oh, cool, what's this? You know, and all this other stuff. Oh, who's this Bukowski guy? Is this history? Bobbin, psychology.
Any other writers in the family?
No, my father.
Your father?
Yeah. My father always wanted to be a writer.
Yeah, but he never pursued that?
He did. He got published in a few pulp magazines at the time and that, still pursued writing for a period and stuff like that. I still wanted to get published and what have you and that, but apart from that, nobody else. Mm-hmm. You know, cool. I did pick up the writing aspect, you know, for my dad and probably the imaginative aspects very much for my mother. Mm. And that's the only clue I could find my family. I'm the last of the family. I'm the one that caught all the genetic driftwood, you know, that came down and that, all the creative stuff. And look what it's done for me.
Do we have another question from the audience?
Did I answer your question, whatever it was?
Yeah. Dave, do we have another question from the audience?
I have some good Frankston stories. You should ask me about this sometime.
No, we've got a question.
Come on, please.
Yes.
Come on.
Hang on, the microphone is coming down your way. Go, Mr. Donahue.
Yes, I have got some sort of a problem. I'm living with a woman. She is against me from coming up here because I'm trying to earn some money off myself, and she is against all that. I just don't know what to do.
Okay. I think you should follow your dreams.
I think you need another writer artist for that. It's not my kind of material. Yeah.
But thank you for your contribution.
Thank you. Thanks.
Excellent.
Thank you. Okay, is somebody else, come on, please, somebody, come on, don't be shy. Please ask a question. Don't just sit there, come on. Thank you. There's a fella there.
Yep. Oh, here comes Mr. Donahue.
I want some interactivity here. Please don't sit like a lump. Okay. Please don't. Okay? Let's have some fun here. You know? I'm the one that could be made a fool of, so let's go for it.
Do you get a buzz or any sort of kick out of feedback you get from people, or do you just do it so you can put your ideas on paper and let them free?
I like getting a buzz out of a kick from people, suddenly responding in that. You're sending out a message in a bottle most of the time. You're communicating. If somebody out there is actually hearing what the hell's going on sometimes, it's not, you know, tedious or all fun all the time. That's pretty good. Mm. But, yeah, it's not just do it for yourself. That's bullshit. Anyone who says they're doing it for themselves is an absolute liar. Mm. There's a sense of pride in what you do, a sense of communication. That's what part of the reason is someone's cartoon or write or do art in that. Don't give me this sort of, no, I do it for myself crap. Rubbish. Absolute rubbish. Mm. That's some sort of egocentric person to do, say something like that.
And you would print correspondence and do reviews and do all sorts of stuff to actually engender that communication.
That's what I did. I said, yeah. I wanted people to think. I want people to be engaged in something. That's why I used to have a lot of correspondence in that. It wasn't just ego, but I said, I want people to correspond and think about ideas. I wanted to, you know, react in some way or another, even if we disagree, if we have that. I mean, the only thing I say about some of my comics is they're a reactive experience, an interactive experience, more so than just a lump of paper in front of you. You have to do the work, people, sometimes. Mm. It's like sometimes I'm not doing too much work myself, but you've got to throw yourself into it. Mm. It's not just looking passively at a computer screen or a bad TV show. You've got to throw yourself into it sometimes. You've got to be part of the party. You can't just be a wallflower. Mm. If I'm making any sense of my useless metaphors now, please tell me.
It's good. I think that's interesting. So how do you communicate? Just tell us quickly, what do you do in terms of how do you your process? We were talking early on, you said you would just have the page in front of you and you would just go. Sort of stream of consciousness stuff is what you were doing in the early 90s.
Hunter S. Thompson without drugs.
Yeah. Hunter S. Thompson without drugs. Yeah. But you still had the altered state of consciousness.
That's what happens sometimes, you get to the altered state of consciousness when the mood's right into it. It's better than the drugs, man. I assure you, speaking of someone.
Yeah. But that's altering a bit, as you say, a little bit more narrative, a little bit more breathing space and world.
Well, that's what's important, because sometimes it sort of gets so involved in your sort of wonderful words, you look like a more hyperactive version of a sort of, you know, desiccated Jack Kerouac or some sort of bad word poet kind of crap going down there. Let any crap come out of their head without any editor. And there's too many jerks in the world kind of pulling that shit already in that. Well, you know, you can't just talk gibberish all the time and get away with it. I mean, I did a pretty good way of doing that, but it was funny about it. But at the same time, a lot of the stuff would just turn out gibberish regardless. You'd be too fond with your own words rather than sort of, you know, the actual feeling behind them and that.
Well,
you can't cover that up. You can't cover up.
Yeah. Well, you were saying earlier that idea of improving, growing, you know, quality, doing quality work, and you said you made some enemies by telling them what you really thought of their work, that the Australian comic community doesn't have a lot of that.
The community is a clusterfuck. The community is just a lot of brown noses just get around a circle with circle jerkers. The way I saw it after a while, I just couldn't stand it. So they would get around and say polite things. Don't say anything bad about that. We're all doing this together. Or you'll never work in this industry again. I love that one. It's very Hollywood. No, honestly, they were saying things like that. You'd have everyone sort of cowardice or some arrogant prick from America coming down and listening to everything they said because how I work for Image Comics. Yeah. And they would think the word of God has come down from on high. Don't say anything bad about them. You see, professionals act like the most bitterest Hollywood rivals and children about having ideas or feelings that... Anyone who stepped out of line that wasn't their way of seeing it. But to get small presses and that, we weren't professional. Yeah. You know, we're not going to sort of play the games of being professionals or being this bullshit games that they'd like to play in that.
So this was the sort of mid-90s sort of boom, I suppose, the comics?
There was no boom. There was just a batch of disparate influences going around. It looked like a boom. It proceeded like a boom. A lot of people thought something was happening, nothing much was going on. What you have is a lot of people that, fortuitous time, that some people were suddenly getting a lot of comics out whether it was small press or sort of, Lord, happened in the old glory days of you could actually get comic books that weren't the Phantom into newsagents if you could find them. And thinking that now the golden times were coming. There were no golden times. There wasn't much talent to go around there. The distribution system was totally screwed as it is now and that. You had a lot of people who had all the answers, like Gary fucking Chandler or that, or some other idiots who came from the States or other pricks or that who worked for companies because they worked in storyboards or animation and that. And actually these people had no... All they were very competent hacks. They're very proficient hacks, can draw rings around most of us, but unfortunately they're not very good rings. They're just, you can't distinguish them from the others and that.
Mm.
And they can't sustain anyone actually having an individual sort of, you know, idea or feeling that wasn't a professional sort of comic, mm-hmm. that wasn't fitted in that. I saw one of these goomers at a sort of convention once, and one of the times when anyone disagreed about something that really had was a thing called Pigs in Space, done by some hack newspaper cartoonist who obviously hadn't discovered the fact that comics had grown in the past 20 years since he last looked at one in the 1940s. It was just terrible beyond belief. There's a whole batch of us, even though we hated each other, all found one thing that we all could mutually hate, and it was this Punks in Space, this horrible, funny animal comic. We all hated it. Yet at one sort of standard, you know, money-making dinner where everyone smoozes this guy, he's naturally saying, so, oh, no, this is really good. Everything is good for the industry. You know, and they're not all bad. There's all bad things. I'm just going groaning. I'm getting away from this fucker. I can't stand it, you know. So, and these people just listened to it. Most people at conventions are like shivering weasels. They go...
shivering
they
weasels.
Going, look, they're listening to the... Let's listen to the big man. He's working for Marvel Comics. No, he hasn't set his deadline. He hasn't made his deadline for 6 months, but there you go.
So, okay, so what's out there now that you like, that meets your standard?
I have a standard.
Yeah, well, obviously. Well, you have an opinion.
I have an opinion.
You have an opinion.
Oh, you put me in a corner now, man.
Come on. It's no holds barred.
It's no holds barred.
Well, you were saying earlier you saw Nikki Greenberg's Great Gatsby at the airport.
Okay.
You're quite happy to see that.
Nikki Greenberg sort of really knocked me for a loop in that when I saw the Great Gatsby. Well, it was terrific. Sean Tan knocked me for a loop. Everyone should be knocked out by Sean Tan and that. I saw Mandy sort of, book Mandy or that is and that, which is... Not quite there yet, but it's, you know, first kind of time, first served in that, so it's got to be... See, I warned you I'd be saying things, but you've got to be honest with some people in that. I hate it, but I've got to be, because I'm a brutalist when it comes to my own work, and you're getting off easy. But basically, there's a few good things coming on there.
Mm-hmm.
Though, unfortunately, a lot of people are going to do out graphic novels now.
And graphic? So what do you think of the term, the idea of literary comics?
I'm going off to play my grand piano. I mean, that's what most people are sort of looking at. A graphic novel is just something that looks good on the shelf. It's still a comic. We're still doing comics.
Mm.
You know, there's nothing wrong with comics. They're all types of comics. Some of us intuitively know that.
Mm.
We're really intuitive in that. We don't need to be told in that. The grain and wash need to be constantly told in that, but who gives a fuck after a while? You get tired of it.
Mm.
Tired of explaining your stuff and what the varieties of comics that are out there.
Mm.
Besides, you know, whatever the hell I'm up to, what the hell everyone else is up to. Mm. The great, you know, like literature or music, there's all sorts out there. There's some bad stuff, there's horrible, vile junk, but there's some pockets of independence and resistance to doing marvellous stuff.
Mm.
Creatively ambitious, thoughtful, funny. Very important. We need more funny comics out there.
Yeah, so let's talk about...
This is why I get down about some of these people. We're so damn serious sometimes. Yeah.
So tell us about funny in your work. This is comic book funny, after all, and I'm speaking to Jared Ashworth.
Good fuck, he's right.
So funny, what is humour, I was going to say. I'll suck that back in. What's your sense of humour? Where do you derive humour from, apart from, well, is it just the absurdity of existence?
That's too simple. Every sort of cartoonist you use, I derive from the absurdity of existence or, you know, aren't people funny or what have you. I really don't know. I'm not one of those people that can be tagged down with a simple, give me a one word, you know, simple thing we can make a movie out of, or, you know, one paragraph thing and that. One time some idiot reviewer for Silver, a TV program, asked me a question, you know, what are the weird stress kittens? And, you know, after 15 minutes... find a sign to go with sort of, you know, the sound grabber of that. They are the gremlins of my mind. So,
yeah.
And that was the only thing I could do because, you know, Lord knows you don't want anyone to talk intelligently about the subject and so on. No, just give us a short soundbite. And I'm doing it now, ain't I? Sorry, sorry, folks. I'm very nervous and excited about all this.
No, it's good.
But I don't know. I still don't. I'm still working for it.
There's a lot of physical humour in your work.
I love the fact there's accident. I want something that's alive that leaps off the page. I love stuff that actually has to, you've got to be there. I don't think we should be frightened of some of my work sometimes. Oh, it's too much energy. I said, what's wrong with that? Because a lot of stuff is lethargic. What's wrong with energy? If it's focused the right way to say something that's got movement and passion and feeling and dialogue and words that you have to think of and characters you actually care about. It's not. That's why I say interactive. Are you afraid of actual comics being comical or moving like animation? You shouldn't be in that. You could do all sorts of things. You could have this density of information, this density of feeling. You know, if a character gets hit in one of my comics, you can tell, well, there it is now. Something's going horribly wrong up there. You can tell. But you'd rather have that going on rather than an empty experience in that. To me, it's not a line is not a dead line. A lot of people want a perfect line that just lies there dead. You've got a lot of alternative cartoons that do that. And they look with perfectly dead lines. Everything is right. Everything looks okay. But there's no energy there. No passion. No emotional involvement. No nothing. You've got furniture artwork. You've got tango artwork. You've got the worst of Drawn and Quarterly artwork. But there's no sort of sense of life anymore. It's a disaffected form of experience. And I can't accept that. I want you to, when I do something, I invite you to a dance. We're going to dance with ideas. We're going to dance with the characters. We're going to have some fun. We're going to have some sort of joy here. We're going to sort of get lost for a while. Perhaps we'll find something along the way. I know that sounds sappy, but I'm heading that way. I want something you to feel more, you know, to feel more than something that's just simple anymore than that. Maybe I've always been going that way. I've got a way for the more viperous side of me saying, listen to me, little man, you know, that kind of crap. Where I said, listen, I want to take you someplace. You may not find it beautiful sometimes, but sometimes it can be beautiful and evolving and something more. And so demanding a bit more of you. Something else, someplace else that matters. I know it sounds weird, but I got to go there. That's what I'm doing Limbo August for, which is important to me. So I want to take you someplace.
Yeah. So you sort of stood back for a few years?
I had to, man. Yeah. I burnt out. I was drinking myself to death. Literally, and I ended up in hospital and that. Now, I had to go for the detox routine, which is always fun.
Where was that? When was that, sorry?
That was about 2001.
Yep.
2002 and that, you know. I was really losing it. If you want to know what a scenario was, I'd be straight doing my comics, okay? Here's the tragic bit, people. I'd be straight doing my comics, do them, put them out straight like that, become a routine, get them out there, then drink myself. Cheap wine, booze, anything like that for a few weeks. Sober up again after the usual duty, sober up, get back and doing comics again, go for the usual depression that nobody's picking up my stuff and get it, go and do it again, find it was looting a cycle which was affecting my work, affecting me, affecting social relationships and that. You know, I was going for all the cliches. And I hate living a cliche.
So now that you've done sort of, what was the first one you put out last year?
Flayed Intentions, which pretty much sums up anything I do. Anything I do is a Flayed Intentions.
So Flayed Intentions, and have you broken that cycle?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's that feel like?
It feels fucking great.
Yeah?
I feel alive. I feel great. I feel the sea of joy of actually getting back and cartooning again and suddenly really realising that I ain't lost it. I've gained a lot in that, you know. There was no miracle cure. There was no overnight cure, anything like that. There was no like sportsman's like epiphany saying, well, I'm really sorry I let down my mates, but I want to get back in the game now. I won't rape little school children anymore and that. It's so sad. Sorry, Manly. Whatever crap they get up to. It takes a while to sort yourself out.
Yep.
Yeah, whether you're strong or better for it, you know, I'm better for it than that. I would say that's a good thing for anyone to go through, though. Yep. There's no romantic notions there, please. No, there's nothing romantic about that shit at all. Nothing at all.
Just sheer hard work, is it?
It's sheer hard work, yeah. Sheer hard work and pain. Pain. Good old. Good old wonderful pain. There's nothing like it.
We'll come back in a second and wrap up so what we're doing. But are there any more questions from the audience? David has a microphone. Anything that's cropped up? Got another one down the front here.
Are you planning to make your stuff available online?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Some people have already put some of my stuff online and that, and I'd rather put, as I've told everyone, I said, I'd rather be responsible for my own fuck-ups rather than somebody else taking responsibility for them. So if I've done something really bad, saying at least I can say, this is really terrible, but I'm putting out to you so that you don't have to do crap like this. But the really good stuff, I want to put it in a context, at least so you know, okay, here's where I did something really good. This other thing, I can't live with. Now it's in your mind or something like that. So, but at least I've given people a context or a little bit of history where everything is. It's not going to be like one of those tedious, you know, one of those websites about webcomic artists or whatever it is now.
Oh, Penny Arcade.
Penny Arcade crap. I really hate webcomics. I really do, people. You can start asking me questions about that because, you know, talk about retards. Well-meaning retards, but retards nonetheless. But, you know, good, that should be good for blood. But I need to get it online to sort of, you know, put something in the consciousness out there so people can see, you know, because if they want to read my stuff, they can make their own minds up about it. Lord knows my stuff is dense, but at least it's not something that's going to be saying, I got a 30-second giggle about something they made fun about technology, ho, 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 and gamers. Or my drunken girlfriend's relationship with a lesbian next door strips. You know, these great strips everyone's doing about their wonderful lives. Please, I want something really funny, you know, out there.
Another question from the audience?
Come on.
No? Anyone? Any questions about comics?
Come on, please. Anything. Come on, shoot at me. Give me your best shot. Come on.
They're all scared up the back.
They shouldn't be scared. You shouldn't be scared. Uncle Jared is here to be your friend. To be your friend forever and ever and ever.
That's right. You can trust him. He's
you
sober
You can trust
now.
Me. I'm sober. I don't drink and stuff like that. I'm just made this way. They're standing there. This is incredible.
Sorry, go David.
The voice of God is coming in a little bit.
Yeah.
We don't have a copy of Modern Murder 30, which is my favourite of your comics, to project up behind you, but I thought maybe you could describe the events in that comic and what led you to depict them in the way that you did.
Okay, Modern Murder 30 was about my experience when I got waylaid by a cult in the early 80s, or a religious cult, the Bhagwan Ra Nish. What was happening in the 80s, I was working in a bookshop, father's bookshop, a few people came around and said, saw my work, so I was doodling and that, and asked if I wanted to be a storyboard artist, I thought, right. And they were just doing one of those many sort of little tax dodge sort of operations around the early 80s and that. So I thought I can get involved with them. And one day he asked me, do you want to go up and see the boss? You know, oh yeah, I'll go up and see the boss, find out who's behind this operation. It wasn't until about, you know, half an hour to this whole car trip that I suddenly realised they were going to see their boss was a cult leader in a religious organisation. And there was no way out. Thus began one of the most fascinating experiences of my life. As I was trapped with a psychotic man, a weeping sort of willow of a woman, and that, you know, sort of idiot fanatics rushing around, religious devotions, you know, spouting idiocies all around me, and that, trapped in Brisbane, unable to get out, and just sort of said, so it sprouted from that. It was one of those things that just came, you've got a story there, it must be told. The story must be... It's all there. It's not one of those things, I'll do a story about this because it's fascinating. I said, this is a goddamn good story. This went through this. It's all there. Don't fuck it up. So I did the second time. I did it one time. It wasn't good enough. Second time I did it, I finally nailed it, called it the clear light. And I nailed down the entire experience precisely. I went back into my mind back there and sort of put it down precisely. And the good thing about that, I give a bit more humanity. It could have been just a little sort of, no, here's my experience with psychos. But I asked to put a bit more empathy for some of the people I was involved with. Well, some of them, particularly a psycho, he's sort of going crazy all the time. But his sister really cared for him. I saw bits of him that were really a good human being was there once, and how his sister cared for him. I've got to put that there. It'd be too easy just to scrape up shit like stuff like that is not important. I thought, this is important. So it turned to be a really good story to do and finally get right. It was all there. So it's one of the things I'm fond of. Not one of the best, because I'm fond of or the kitten's work and a few other solo pieces and that. But it's a solid piece. It's like something that should work as a sort of, now. It's a good intro for a lot of people because, you know, oh, it's a real-life experience, which, as you know, usually says is a really dull experience. You know, I'm telling a story no one wants to hear, sort of kind of story. And it wasn't. It's all there. You can't screw it up. It's a good yarn. It's a good story in that. Though my favourite thing was about a critical review that gave about, that said, you know, well, you know, It's a good story, but it's not art. Go fucking figure. I always loved that one. I used to that. I thought, great. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's not art. I'm glad it's not art. You know, I've got to admit that sometimes art kills. Mm. I really am. I've seen so many people screwed by trying to be fucking artists, trying to be sort of, you know, something they're not and don't have the guts to be that and losing any emotion or ability as a human being.
Could have been good art, but no story.
It could have been good art, no story. It could be sort of, I'm wandering on a road to nowhere, but here is my experience for your sort of, now here's my calligraphy for your experience, you know, little doodle sort of things. You know, things that side pages of Mom or Chroma's Ergot or, you know, that tango thing, you know, I mean, or any other sort of small independent gutless thing that's out there in that. I know I'm probably offending some people, but really we need a bit more energy out there. But that's terrible. When you do a good story that's well told, that you can't win that because it's not art. There is something wrong. You know, it's just a good story well told. I accept that. It's not art. I'd accept that. But unfortunately, a lot of your art has no passion, no emotion, no motivation, no construction, no nothing. Please, I don't want anything to do with it. You know, I'd rather be a mongrel. I'd rather be a mutt. I'll be a wild kitten rather than your artist tops. I can't stand you.
Ross, speaking of mongrel stuff, we've got here your latest, Flayed Intentions. Yeah. No. Yes. No.
Flayed Intentions.
This is the latest.
That is the latest.
This is the
I'm
latest.
I'm still working on Limbo 1.
Yeah. And lovely colour cover. Colouria. Lovely work. And this is the one we were talking about. It's got a little bit more breathing space.
Yeah.
You were talking about you've been constructing it in a different way to your earlier works. In
the other way, something like this is more constructed. The other one suggests that it's for time to sort of nail myself down. I finally got the format of this big and that. So I had to figure out what the story was going to be and how I was going to approach it. But also have enough notions where to go fucking off my head and just go wild with the story, but still have enough ideas and feelings to go with it and that. So I sat down, nailed it all down, thought, you know, I'm just going to go wander off someplace and strange things happen to me, which is a great way to start anything from one of my stories. But I knew that basically I'd nail it down first. Now, instead of one damn thing after another, I'd lead up to that damn thing leading to another, or be inspired to it, or lead up to a sequence or plan out the sequence, you know, of a wild action sequence. We'd go through a few pages and mostly silent with weird sound effects. And suddenly sort of do a change halfway through where I can meet an old version of myself who happens to be the drunken, absolutely psychotic, gone off the fucking face of the planet version of myself that I'm trying to reason with and not winning at all, which is not too far from the truth of what I was like. And I also made sure it was going to have a happy ending. I get the girl at the end. Mind you, she's a cute little skunk woman, but damn it, I have my sexual taste, you have yours. So, and I deserved a bit of happiness, okay? No. So did you.
But, so what's next?
Fun. What's next? I've got two things. What's next? There was another thing I want to do in Flayed Intentions. I mean, it's open season. One thing is I want to do is a total attack on everything that's wrong with comics nowadays. But because I'm the only person that could do it and actually mean it.
Yes.
It was going to be misunderstanding comics. And I thought, you know, there's so many of those stupid volumes around that telling people, hey, you do comics this way, you do comics that way, the stupid how to draw manga books, the essayists, the crap artists. And now I just want to totally tear it up. I have this urge to tear things apart. I just said, I cannot stand this. I've got to go for the throat. And there's another story I want to do in Flayed Intentions. I mean, it's free form. I'm just saying these up. I may change my feelings in that because the main thing I'm doing is Limbo August now.
Yeah. And so tell us about Limbo August.
Limbo August is about this place and this woman that lives there. And also, obviously, about her sister. It's about Danny August, who has a woman that's got, living here, and a sister who's Sab, who's Sabrina Ware's Driskittens, but they're Augusts through and through and that. So it's basically all sort of female characters up front. Don't know why, I wasn't playing it. There's no commercial motivator for having female characters. It's just like, I know these ladies so well by now. It's just that they won't go away. But basically, I don't know what the... It is just basically your sort of crazed fantasy adventure strip and that. That'll take you places that you thought you'd gone to but never been to before and that. But basically, it's kind of been very, very structured that just as you think you know where you're going, it's just going to be another useless fantasy strip. It all turns, the only way I can say it, it all turns Ashworth, which people expect of me by now, that it just is not going to go the other way. It's going to other territories. Something that looks simple suddenly isn't in that. Mm. But there is a lot of, I've already had a great deal of fun with it. Because it's going to treat people with intelligence. Yeah. It's got a lot of wonderful things and also some fun stuff, but it's controlled.
How mapped out is it?
It's mapped out towards the end.
Yep.
I know how it ends, kind of, I may change the way then. But there's a lot of territory to cover. It's this entire place that people have seen hints of in my work throughout the years. It's in the Kittenverse. It's in some of my backgrounds. And I said, I know what this place is like. Mm. I know what this world's like. It's a strange anthropomorphic universe where, you know, we've got humans, cats and dogs and that, you know. And it can be cartoonic. It's different. It's just pure. Most of it's just pure imagination I'm going for. But at the same time, I've got to make sure it's got this great story going on. You've got heroes, you've got villains, you've got action, adventure, romance, dancing, you know, sex, violence, a little bit of a so-so message, eh, lads? But it's just got something that said, it's something I was interested in doing for ages. I said, well, why can't you do a kind of good old comic that is comic, using things that should be cliches and overturn and have a damn good time and treat the readers with intelligence, particularly female audience members? Mm. I don't know why. I kept saying, I feel like I'm doing something. So I've got female friends to say, we've been waiting for you to do something like this.
I was about to ask, who do you think these readers with intelligence are?
They're out there. I've met them in that. You can't demonstrate them because they just, people with intelligence suddenly respond saying you're up to something. Or they're out there. They have to find you. You have to find them. You have to get it out there. There are audience that does think. There are audience that does respond. There are audience that just does sort of get out of their safety zones and check out other areas that they don't go for the hit of the moment or the hit of the week that their friends ask for. They get out there and they search. They want something else. They want something that's missing in their lives. You know, and that's all ages. Mm. That's all ages.
Is this part of wanting to get on the internet so you're easier to find?
Yeah, it's the only way because we know distribution sucks. And walking around comic shops sucks. And getting it out there. It's the only way to get it out in a bigger, well, a marginally better audience than that. It'd be nice to sort of get out to other shops than that and places to be seen now. That remains to be seen. The only thing that matters in the first place is doing the work. And part of that work involves distribution. So I'm trying to get my mind around these concepts. It's easy enough to draw the stuff and work with all that, but then reality has to come in. Strange enough, a reality plays a lot of parts in my work in that. Not on the usual, say, hey, man, what is reality? You know, that kind of crap. No, just so trying to mix and blend in that, how it shifts around. Look, I'm trying to be simple here, but most of what I do is, I hate to say it, somewhat more complex.
Yeah.
I try to simplify it, but I can't help but going further with it, and I hope some people go along the way in that. I hope I'm engaging enough and funny enough and said, let's just say, there's a place. This is the only premise I've got. It's quite simple. There's a place. There's this woman. Let's go. Yeah. Let's go. Let's ride. Let's go where she takes us. Let's go where her sister takes us or what these other characters are coming up. There's a whole thing to discover in that. And you'll find it's just got a lot of connections to our world as well. Never mind that they've got funny animal heads. It's this world that's got its own weird, bizarre logic here. It's not like, you know, it ain't Duckburg.
I wanted to ask you about your world now. So you've done two, sort of working into three sort of full works since, you know, you've been sober and feeling more in control of your life.
Yeah.
And you're happy with that direction? You're happy with... Were you scared that you wouldn't be able to do that sort of work? But we started again?
Yeah, I was shit scared. Yeah. I was shit scared because I'd lost it and that. I was absolutely scared. I mean, I really lost. I was frightened. I couldn't even put a pen to page. I was second-guessing myself a lot. It took a while to get me out of that period as well because it wouldn't matter any sort of line. I was going for chronic, incredible, frightening indecision. It wasn't like a writer's block. It's like anything. Nothing was right. Any thought was wrong. Anything wasn't original. I'd be thinking, I can't write this. Some European's done it. I mean, Jesus, it was madness. I mean, it was like incapable of actually creating because, you know, this manning sense of other things around me that everyone's done this or some idiot in Yugoslavia has done this or some fucking fanatic's going to come down to my head and saying this has been done, this has been done. I said, enough! I've got to do it myself. I can't stand these hideous voices. I've got my own internal critic to put up with. I just don't want to do crap. I don't want this manning shit that sort of develops most of our lives in it. Sorry, folks, the passion is starting to come through.
No, that's
but I really do care about having something more that people can react to in that. I want people to feel a bit more, react a bit more and experience that and not in a lousy sort of unemotional, unfriendly way. I'm sick of that. I'm sick of comics that deal with it. I'm sick of entertainment that does that.
When you say you're sick of comics that deal with
it, I'm sick of this emo porn pandering that goes on. I'm sick of this sort of no
pornography. Give us a few creators' names. Like, are you thinking of the Drawn and Quarterly sort of crowd and the Fantagraphics crowds?
No, well, I like more the Fantagraphics than I do the Drawn and Quarterly crowd in that. There's a few people out there who've done some terrible, terrible things. Mm. There's a horrible thing called Cancer Vixen, which I reviled completely.
Cancer Vixen, yeah, that was a fashion editor who
had cancer. A fashion editor and cartoonist who has a sort of middle life crisis and writes a little girl at the age of sort of 42. It was just, it was fucking awful, people. If you ever see a copy cheap, look at it. You will be in awe of the madness and badness of it. You will believe that a person who sort of now lives in New York and has a fascinating career and sort of now literary guide for a husband and that can write like a little girl of 16 after all experience. Oh, it's about shopping. Very important. Women. Yes. It's always about shopping.
Shopping is a cure for cancer.
Shopping is a cure for cancer and that. Shopping is a cure for cancer in a midlife crisis in New York, you know, and just with our loving husband. I was just vile. I was revolted by the whole thing. And this was by a major publisher. They're still struggling around what publish a graphic novel. They'll publish any shit. Yeah. They will publish anything that's well-meaning.
What's blown you away? What have you read recently that's blown you away?
Epileptic by David Lasky. David B. was terrific.
David B., yeah.
Anything
French
by Joe Sacco.
Joe Sacco.
What was it? Blasted. Mine, slipping away.
He did some Iraq stuff? Was it
he did
Yugoslavian
Joe
stuff?
Joe Sacco did Palestine, but his other knockout was Safer at Gazard, which is a
fucking
knockout.
Safer at Gazard.
And then I think all the fucks, which were just blatantly absolute knockouts.
Yep.
Absolute knockouts. Out of the ballpark and that.
I know that there's
a whole bunch of stuff. There's people I really like, Jason, his European cartoon.
Jason,
Lewis
Trondheim.
There's Margie Santrapi and that. There's other people still doing good stuff. There's the inevitable Chris Ware. You always must bring up Chris Ware in these conversations.
Well,
because you don't.
I like
Chris Ware, but
wondering what you thought of him.
I really like him.
You really
I really fucking like his stuff and that, you know, but I just hate people just saying, Chris Ware. Oh, yes, Chris Ware. Right. It used to be the old days and say, now, who's the best comic writer in the world? Alan Moore. Yeah, Alan Moore. All right, Alan Moore. Don't mention the name, please. We'll keep away from that. They used to do that. They used to be, who's the best comic writer? But there's so many, for all this negativity, there's also people out there who are still fucking funny as well, bless them. There's still people.
So who split your sides that you've read recently? Who's been funny?
Well, I picked up a couple of dorks just a couple of hours ago that I missed by Evan Dork and that. It's Johnny Ryan splits my sides. There's a few other people that do some sort of strips I've seen and sort of, not Drawn a Quarter, Crammers who have got that crack me up amazingly. Now, there's a whole bunch of people that I've just encountered lately that I want to get my hands off. The name's not Richie's, but a lot of funny, doing some really funny stuff out there. And unfortunately, my mind's drawing a blank. I had all the names registered before I came up here. Now they're all blurring again.
That's all right.
But there's a whole batch of people doing really great, funny stuff out there that just say, this is generally funny. And it doesn't involve sort of computers.
Yes. So you don't like the idea of using computers in comic art much?
Yeah. Computers are just a tool. Well, I was paid to say that.
Yes.
But everyone says that. No. If you ain't got it, you ain't got it. Computers ain't going to cover it up. You can use all the sort of polychromatic spree colours you got in the system and that. You can age up your comic to look old and that. I've seen too many computer comics because the colour's got to be there. The basics have got to be there. I say to people, the only expert advice I can say, pen, piece of paper, go fish before you can use the techniques and that.
Mm.
But you've got a lot of people saying, of course I can draw on a computer. I've got a tablet. I've got that. I said, no. You know, find a wall and scrawl shit on it. At least scrawl before you can walk. Mm. I've seen some people use this saying, look at the colours, man. The colours I can throw up there. And it looks like polychromatic effluent. You know, people who just throw fonts and colour and all this stuff. And then they look terrible. They look like bad airbrush work for the 70s. That's bad enough to look at, you know. If it was really cosmic, man, look at the waves. I'm surfing on the universe, you know. But even worse, they're trying to be funny and they sometimes they'll obscure the gags with so much technical finesse. You're just lost, you know. Mm. It's like a DreamWorks production. Whoa, it looks really good, doesn't it? Yes, but is it funny? No, it's not. It's not funny at all.
All right.
So that's it.
I think, do we have any last questions from the audience? Yes, microphone at the back? Oh, you, I thought you were pointing it at him. Did he have a question?
I'm offering it around.
Okay. One last question. We'll do the official wrap-up.
Oh, please, one more.
Come on.
I don't get to do this often.
Here we go. down, one more down the front.
What is the meaning of life?
Well, I don't know, but I created you for that reason. And I'm still waiting for you to answer on that.
Very nice. Well, Jared, it's been a pleasure meeting you and talking to you and getting a little bit more insight into what you do and how you do it and how you think. It has been genuinely interesting. Is there any last words, any final words, in case you trip over when you fall off, you know, come when you go off the stage?
Yeah, I like to keep myself an orange juice. Yeah, that'd be the way to go on that, you know. Any last words in that? Well, the only last words is that I've just got to keep on going.
Yeah.
You know, just in fact, it's all, you know, don't do work that's fucking indifferent. Don't do fall into the usual fucking traps a lot of people fall into. Don't do work that's sort of lousy and lazy and ill-considered and that. Throw some love into it. Throw some love and passion to the work. And we'll be ill-placed and lousy at first and that. And we're all going to make mistakes. All relationships make mistakes. But better take a goddamn chance rather than just sitting around just being like all the other plebs out there. Or the other so-called professionals and that. If you've got something in there, you'll find it. You'll find it. It may take a lot of time. It may not be commercially successful, but somehow you'll just say, I've got to do it because there's so much crap in the world. I feel like adding a bit of something better here and that. I know it sounds a bit sort of precious, but sometimes you've got to do that rather than that. And also, I want to keep my hate intact. I love my hate.
Well, here's
to keep on that hate because I do it real well.
Here's to loving hate, Jared Ashworth. Yeah. Thank you very much for coming to Comic Book Funny. Thank you.
Okay, I'm out of here, folks. Take care.
Thank you very much. Please thank John Retallick, the interviewer, and Jared Ashworth, the mutt and mongrel, who hadn't been on a plane in 25 years and came down just for this. Thank you very much, Jared.